The information presented in this podcast is intended to be for entertainment and educational purposes only. It should never be used in place of advice given by a mental health or medical professional, or as a substitute for mental health treatment. If you're struggling with a mental health issue, please seek professional help. Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Fangirl Business.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Krisha. And today we are talking about episode 17 of Supernatural's 15th season, Unity. And I think that we've reached the point in the season where we're probably going to have a hard time finishing sentences and are just going to be making inarticulate noises with some frequency. So just fair warning. I feel like it's worth putting it out there.
I think that's a good fair warning.
And that's blanket from here on out. Like, that's just a blanket warning, because there's a lot that happened in this episode that I have a tremendous amount of feelings about.
Yes.
And for the listeners, just to share our process, you know, usually we sort of game plan right before we record. Like, okay, what are the big points that you want to hit? And then we compare notes. And this one, it was just you and I sighing for like 45 seconds.
Big pauses.
Yeah.
So, I don't think there's any outlining this one. I think we're just gonna, I don't know, spew emotions for a while.
Yes. Yes, very much that.
So, do you want to start? Where would you like the spewing of emotions to begin?
Oh, let's start with a moment that spawned a bajillion F-bombs all over Twitter and caused me to make a noise of my television that I have never made before in the history of watching Supernatural. I don't know what that sound was when Dean said that Jack isn't family?
Last I checked, we don't give up on family. Jack's not family.
It was like someone had physically punched me in the stomach, and the sound that came out was sort of like this pain-strangled gasp. And like that sound did not come out of me with the breakup. It did not come out of me with like Jack dying. It was just a whole other level of pain for me.
Yeah.
And then I got really, really, really mad. And you already know this because I spent quite a bunch of time saying that I hated Dean Winchester to you in private messages. Mm-hmm. You were wonderful. You listened. You made emoji faces with the teeth going like the cringy face.
Well, we should, you know, for context. So I watched the episode when it aired on Thursday. I watched it live, and you didn't watch it until today, which is the following Monday. So this is still fresh for you, whereas I've had 4 days of processing. So you were in your full just coming out of the episode rage, whereas I had gotten to a slightly different place. I'm not sure where I am, but anyway, that's how I was playing a supportive role as you were going through it today.
Thank you. Yeah, more time to process.
So that happened. Yeah, my face looked like Sam's face. Like I had just been punched. Like I flinched physically.
Yeah, like Sam like physically pulled back, like he recoiled. And then there were like tears in his eyes. And I'm just going to say now that the two shining stars of this episode were Sam and Jack.
They're so good.
I wanted to hug them both and wrap them up in blankets and feed them cookies and milk and tell them that they are loved and amazing. And also, I still want to marry Sam. But yeah, I just, they were incredible. And I know sometimes, especially Sam fans will feel like he doesn't get enough airtime. Like he doesn't get enough of like the big moments. Mm-hmm. But this, for me, like this entire episode was like a big Sam episode. Just like I cheered for him in the Impala at the end of the last episode, I just cheered for him through this entire episode. Like every time he was on screen, it was reminding me why I love Sam so much. So I just wanted to throw that out there at the beginning. Like Sam and Jack were incredible in this episode. I love them so much. And I'm so angry with Dean. I can't even. You've processed more. So like, where are you with all of this? Because I'm in a place where intellectually I can put together a lot of reasons for Dean behaving the way that he behaved in this episode. But emotionally, I absolutely cannot excuse it. What you do when it's the very worst of times is what matters, and he torpedoed and he cannot take that back, and I am so angry. So there's the intellectual part of me that can rationalize stuff, but it doesn't matter to the emotional part of me that's so mad. So you having time to process it more and think through it more, where are you at and what's the journey been like for you from watching to here? Because I'm imagining it's been something.
Yeah, it's been a lot. And so the historian in me always needs to put context on things, right? So we are recording this on November 2nd, 2020. The American presidential election between Biden and Trump is tomorrow.
Yes.
And I can't really describe the level of not just anxiety, but real fear that is gripping just so many people in the country, and certainly me. I am absolutely terrified, and I am triggered beyond belief from 2016. I remember that very well. And so the timing and the way that everything is matching up between the show and the real world is really impacting the way that I am experiencing the show right now.
Yeah.
The show is not a comfort place because we know it's ending and we know big bad things are going to happen. So it's a challenge getting myself to watch it on Thursdays at this point, which sucks. Mm-hmm. Like it just sucks. And yeah, it's not a place to escape into at this point. And that's making it tough. You know, the other thing is that the COVID numbers are spiking again in my area and in the country and around the world. And that's driving a lot of the anxiety too. So I have kind of reached a threshold where I just can't really process or cope with much more. So I've been very shut down emotionally. It's just a defense mechanism. And that is true with the show as well. So the first time that I watched this episode, I was approaching it from a very analytical standpoint. You know, I was kind of looking for podcast points in my head and things like that, which is not how I typically approach things, but that's where my brain was deciding to go because it's safer there. And my toddler kept coming in and interrupting and wanting to talk. And, you know, I couldn't focus. And so I watched this episode and I was pissed at Dean, but it was more just disappointment and devastation. But like, I didn't cry. And I'm usually a fictional crier. You know, I got through that last scene, that whole last like 12, 15 minutes, stone faced. And that is not like me. And it was because my emotional brain was just like, no, we're not doing this right now. You see it. We're taking in that information, but there was a disconnect. Like I just couldn't quite be in it. Like I just wasn't feeling it quite the way that I felt like I maybe should be feeling it. I'm not really sure. And then I wasn't sure because, you know, we've had some episodes that have been kind of rocky. So that I'm like, am I just not in it because there's something missing? Like, is this a me issue? Is this a show issue? I'm not really sure. And so I just ended the first watch of the episode just kind of like, okay, that was painful and I'm going to go. You know, there was not a lot of lingering. It was just like, okay, I'm going to go. And so I was like, okay, so clearly something was going on there. I need to watch it again. So I watched it again the next day when I wasn't going to get interrupted by my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I went like hardcore analytical. I'm taking notes the whole time. I'm like writing sheets and sheets of dialogue because I wanted to understand every word. I wanted to make it all fit. Mm. And strangely, I got to the end of that and was still like, something's missing.
Yeah.
Gosh, Krisha, I wonder what it was. So today I was like, maybe I should just watch it with no expectation and no taking notes and no kids and no anything. Like, just experience the thing instead of trying to pick it apart while I was watching it. Yeah, that worked. I interpreted Dean's behavior in a way that I hadn't even considered and had my own emotional break in the middle of the day doing that. So I still don't have any idea where I am emotionally. I don't know that I have a full understanding of what happened in the episode. And I think we are probably not going to be able to capture a lot of the themes going on week to week right now. I think we'll probably spend a lot of time looking much more in depth at some of the existential implications of things that are happening, you know, after the show is complete.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there's just so many things that I'm like, I still don't know what I think about that. And I think I could take a month talking to you to try to even think about getting there. But
yeah, I think we can for sure plan on revisiting these last four episodes once we have the entire context and mm-hmm. we can kind of have a little bit more time, because you're right, we could absolutely spend, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours talking about individual elements of this episode. We could spend an entire episode talking about what's going on with death. We could spend an entire episode talking about
the empty and the
garden. The empty, yeah, or like any of those things. We could we could spend whole episodes talking about a lot of different things, and just with the pace of what's happening, we like physically cannot do that. So mm-hmm. I think it makes sense to focus on the emotions now and mm-hmm. a few little bits and bobs that I think are interesting in terms of echoes from the past that they're bringing up again now. But I think you're right. I think we absolutely will need to come back and do deep dives on thematic elements that they're exploring in the last four episodes. So yes, agree very much.
Because it's hard to fully understand what I think, because we're so clearly still in the thick of it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I think these last couple episodes are probably going to be pretty concentrated time-wise. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to really to like land solidly anywhere on what's going on. I think that obviously Dean's behavior in this episode, like, it hurt.
Yeah.
With the breakup and the rupture, I had this very unique experience of feeling personally betrayed by Dean. Like, he broke my trust. It wasn't even Cass's trust. It was mine.
I remember you talking about that. Yes.
This was a very similar sensation of, you did not just say that Jack isn't family.
Yeah.
And Alex Calvert's face.
Yeah.
I know how you feel about the kid, okay? I care for him too. I do. But he's not like you. He's not like Cass. He's just not.
I'm ready.
I can't put words to what that felt like to see.
That man can act.
Jeez. And I feel like they portrayed him, which they've been doing a lot lately, but I feel like every episode it gets more and more, as this baby.
Yeah.
Like, I'm aware that technically speaking, Alex Calvert is like an adult, but like,
yes,
like, he's a grown man, but I cannot look at Jack and see a grown man. No. He looks like a baby.
He does.
He really, when they put him next to Dean, or they put him next to Adam, and I was like, he's an infant. Like, that's an infant. Yep. And Dean was mean to him. Like,
mean is an understatement.
Well, we don't use profanity on this show, so I'm trying to.
Yeah, so many F-bombs. Yeah, you know, it's funny because you said that you didn't cry, and I typically, like, I will tear up during episodes. Like, I'll have feelings and I'll get a little teary. But usually, like we've talked about, I kind of experience emotions on a delay. And it takes me a while to process and then feel them. And this was just like I started sobbing, and I don't do that. So it's funny how we were both kind of out of character, but like flipped from from the way that we normally are. The gasp came out of me, and then I think I shouted something like "no" at the television, and then I was maybe Dean's name or something. And then I just like started like full on sobbing, like shaky breath, like tears streaming down my face. And then when the camera turned around and it was Jack, it got worse. And I was like, no, Jack. And I don't react like that. And usually it's by talking about it that then I'll be able to experience the emotion. But it hit me viscerally. And then the rage on the heels of that, because it wasn't just that Dean hurt Sam, because he hurt Sam, absolutely. Sam's expression was just stricken. And then it wasn't just that he hurt Jack with, like, Alex Calvert does these doe eyes that are just like, he looks like those little chibi characters with the huge eyes that are just full of emotion, and you just want to hug him. And so it wasn't just that he hurt them, but it was also that I feel like he's and this is just me like starting to unpack stuff. I feel like he's also hurting himself, because he's betraying everything that he's ever stood for. And we've talked all this season about how Dean deserves to have moments for himself that are selfish. So he deserves to have moments where he can sing karaoke, and he deserves to have moments where he can dance, and he deserves to have moments where he can feel his feelings and cry. But he does not deserve to be selfish on this kind of level where you're actively injuring the people that are around you, wishing for the death of someone else so your life can be easier. And like at the end of the episode, it was like everybody else that they've ever cared about. Like, he didn't care about Eileen. He didn't care about Bobby. He didn't care about AU Charlie. Like, he didn't care about any of them. Okay, but that is not who Dean is. That is a betrayal of his core self. And he is better than this. So, like, I'm still obviously really struggling with my words. But I guess what I'm trying to say is he deserves the selfish things. But, like, he doesn't deserve to actively not care about the people that he's always cared for his whole freaking life. The people that have meant more to him than anyone else. And to push them aside like they don't matter is a level of selfishness that is like a betrayal of his core self. And he is better than this. And the level of my emotional reaction to this is, in a weird way, like we were talking a little bit about writing and how we felt about the writing of this episode. And the fact that I am this hot about it to me says that the episode is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. Because we've also talked about this in the past, like, before you can have an upswing, the characters need to reach rock bottom. And I think that Dean is hitting that dark night of the soul place that he needs to before he can hopefully come back up again and reclaim his true self in a way, or claim his true self in a way that he never has before. So that's my rant about Dean Winchester.
I want to, like, I want to talk my way through the anger, because even though I've done some, you know, some processing on my own, again, for me, it's more disappointment. Like, it's hard for me to even get to anger, because it's just, I'm just stuck in this "how could you" place.
So not even disappointment, but like betrayal.
Yeah, that's accurate. Because there's what he said about Jack. Then there's what he said to Jack. His
thank you in the Impala.
"When I found out about Chuck, it's like I wasn't alive. Not really.
You know, like my whole life, I've never been free. But like really free. But now, me and Sam, we got a shot at living a life. Without all this crap on our backs. And that's because of you. So I want to say, I need to say, thank you, Jack. Thank you.
I spent the entire thing telling him to F off repeatedly, to F all the way off, and just go F himself. F you, Dean. That was the content of, like, literally every time he paused. Remember how we talked about how in the prayer scene, every time he paused, I would, like, shriek a little and make inarticulate noises because I was so excited? Every time he paused in this scene, I told him to go F himself in some manner because I was so angry.
Yeah, by that point, I was definitely emotionally shut down. And so I listened to it and I was inside my head. I was like, well, that's a step up. That was probably really hard for him. And that was terrible. And I'm still pissed. So for me, it was just like a lot of blinking. Like,
yes, I can see that as well.
Thank you for dying. So that I can be more comfortable.
Oh my gosh, yes. That is the essence of what it boiled down to.
Okay.
So, and not just so he can be more comfortable, but so that he and Sam can be more comfortable.
Like, he didn't even talk about the world with Amara. He's like, you know, oh, you're saving the world. With Jack, he's just like, oh, like, Sam and I will be happier. And I just was like, really? Like, that's what you're choosing to go with here? Okay. I couldn't even process it. I really was like, that's what happened there. Okay. Well, okay. Let's move on from that. So I'm sure that we will be talking about all of this for a while, because I think I will be sort of unpacking and processing my pissed about this stuff for a bit. So being pissed at Dean took up a whole lot of space in my head while I was going through this episode. But Sam, as you said, he's understated these days. And I think it's because he's done a tremendous amount of work on himself and he's become so much healthier. Being healthy isn't dramatic, right? That's why Chuck doesn't want it.
That's right.
It's not the compelling story. So that's why there's so much more focus on Dean, I think, these days. But Sam, there were a few moments with him that I thought were so profound that set me back on my heels just as much as Dean's outbursts.
Mm.
When he's talking to Jack at the beginning, Jack says,
"You're angry with me."
"No, I'm not angry.
You're disappointed?"
"Jack, look. I wish you'd have been up front with us. But sacrificing your life for a cause takes a lot of courage. I still think it's wrong, though."
Just a very calm, not heated, just a statement. And I, like, that one, I think I did yell at my TV. That I was like, yes! Yes! Because that's the anti-message of the Butch and Sundance. The fact that he has gotten to a point where he has really internalized that is not a glorious end.
Oh.
It may be courageous, but that's not a glorious end. That's not the right thing to do. Because life is valuable. Oh. Every life is valuable. You know, I was just like, oh, I got weepy. I was very emotional about that. Because how many times has Sam tried to chuck himself into whatever to take the, I mean, it's the back and forth, right? It's the, I'll die for you, I'll make the deal, and I'll do this. And that's what they do. Mm-hmm. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Swan song, like we were just talking about, is him throwing himself in the cage to save the world. And yes, it's courageous. And I'm not saying he did the wrong thing, but with age comes wisdom. And I feel like Sam Winchester has become wise.
Oh.
And yeah, it made me very emotional. And the other side of that too, oh, the Sam Cass interactions in this episode made my heart like gooey.
Yes.
I was just like, oh my God, I love them so much.
Yes. And we don't get enough of those.
We don't.
Because, you know, Jared can't be on set with me. Like, army crawling underneath tables to, like, pinch his inner thigh. So we don't get a lot of those scenes anymore. And gosh, I was glad that we got the ones that we did in this episode, because I felt the same way.
Sorry. It's all right. I understand it. I feel it too. It's hopelessness.
Maybe Dean was right.
Yeah, maybe.
It feels wrong. You know, Billy's got Dean so convinced.
But you don't believe her.
I don't know what I believe. I just wish I could talk to her, Billy, before it all goes down, you know, just to make sure.
Like, Sam doesn't throw things when he gets angry. That's like a Dean move.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, like, Sam pushed one book off a table, it's, again, so understated.
It's like an explosion.
Yeah, like, compared to Dean, who would, like, trash the whole library, Sam's like, right. One book. One book.
And Cass is there with the comfort. It was just, like, friendly. You know, it was just this very soft, I don't know, they're just so cute. And my heart, which refused to feel anything, was like, oh, that's really sweet.
Here is some solace in the form of Cass and Sam.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm sure the Sastiel fans were very excited about all of those scenes.
Gosh, they're so cute.
They're so cute. Yeah, we don't get enough of those interactions. And just, like, Cass saying to Sam,
Sam, stay behind to find another way, huh? I would have done the same.
And it's just very affirming. And I loved that Cass took the time to say that, because Dean was being so disparaging and saying he was being the grown up and Sam was acting like a child, essentially. Cass wasn't there for that, but he was basically just being very affirming of Sam and his decisions.
Well, I think the flip side to what I was talking about before with Sam becoming wiser and understanding that sacrificing yourself isn't the right call is Cass, he stopped him to say,
Sam, for what it's worth, I don't think you're crazy. I think your internal compass is functioning perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
And for Sam, who has been on the wrong side of things so many times, yeah. You know, who worked with demons and, you know, accidentally started the apocalypse and accidentally was working with Lucifer and has questioned his own moral compass, that feeling of being an abomination and unclean. I think back to season 4 when Cass would look at Sam and just say, and your brother's an abomination. You know, he was just so like, he would just say that so straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Cass to stop him and say, your internal compass is functioning perfectly, I thought that was just such a beautiful moment for the two of them, because I feel like Cass needed to say it and Sam really needed to hear it.
Yeah. Well, and it reflects on just how far their relationship has come.
Yes, absolutely.
They've all grown and they've all matured. But I think what I like about what we've been talking a lot about in the past few episodes, and I think it
rings true in this episode as well, is that the episodes where you have all four of the characters sort of interchanging and interacting with each other in different ways, rather than it just being Dean and Sam or Dean and Cass, changing up the dynamics a little bit, having those change-ups really enrich the characters, like the individual characters, through their interactions with each other, especially when they're not the go-to.
Mm-hmm.
And Cass and Sam aren't the go-to characters to pair together, which is why I think, for instance, I loved Peace of Mind so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's those dynamics that we don't get to see as much that I think bring out some really special things. And I think that the interactions between Sam and Cass in this episode were absolutely demonstrative of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right from the beginning, where it's Sam calling Cass and checking in with him directly.
Nothing. You sure?
Yes. I'd sequestered myself in the archives of the Basilica of Guadalupe, chasing down a rumor of a spell so powerful it could, quote, wound God himself. But it turns out it was just that, rumor. I don't know what else to do.
That's all right. We'll find the way.
Just get home.
He's not waiting to hear from Cass through Dean about anything. He's picking up the phone and calling him himself, because he's not dealing with any more of Dean's stuff. I really enjoyed those interactions a lot.
Yeah.
It was like one of the only not painful things in the episode. Yep. So I think I kind of like glommed on to those moments, mm-hmm. especially, and just was like, oh, give me all of the sastiel.
It was sweet.
It was. I was particularly proud of Sam. If we're looking at the run-up to the season 14 finale versus the run-up to the season 15 finale,
mm-hmm.
I remember that we were talking about how Sam, after his mom's death, he just fell back into old patterns where he was following Dean's lead on everything and wasn't questioning things, wasn't speaking up even when he was looking really conflicted, and how that was just such a setback for him because he'd been really stepping up as a leader. I'm comparing that to now, and he's taking on his big brother and he's not backing down. He's staying true to himself and to what he believes in. He's trusting his feelings. He's not trying to logic his way out of things.
Or excuse, like make excuses for Dean, which
right.
I think he would have done in the past.
Yeah.
The part that I loved about the Sam and Dean conversation at the beginning, before it went super dark,
yeah,
was Dean saying, that's the only way. And Sam like mocks him.
Yes, he does. I literally have that in my notes.
He mocked him and it was amazing.
Like I said, killing Amara, Jack dying, that's the only way.
The only way. Our one shot, our last chance. You ever get tired of saying stuff like that?
It was like, you know how on Twitter when people are mocking people and they do like the weird caps?
Yeah, it was totally that.
I felt like I could see that with Sam's words.
It was so good.
The only way.
Our one shot, our last chance. Yeah, oh gosh, it was so good.
Like, we have been saying that he's calling Dean on his stuff for, like,
sassy.
A long time now.
Some sassy
yeah,
pants.
Yeah, he's sassy.
I like
and,
it.
And I was just like, good for you. Like, don't let him fall into rhetoric that you know is complete and utter BS. Like, call him on it. Good for you, Sam.
Yep.
Gosh, I was so proud of him in this episode.
So much. He was very, I don't know, Yoda-like. He's just sort of walking around, just pointing out certain things and just being very at ease within himself, even. Like you said, he was trusting his gut and he was doing what he thought was right. Even when he went a different way from his brother, which I'm really intrigued to see what that means for the end.
Ooh, yeah.
And it was just so friggin' healthy. You know, it was just so healthy. And I just wanted to pug him and tell him how proud I am of him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Ask him to marry me. sorry. I will never stop.
Listen, I'll marry Cass and you can have Sam. And that's fine. Do you want to talk about Amara?
I do.
Because I need to talk. I genuinely don't know how I feel yet. And so I feel like I need to talk about it.
Well, it was interesting.
It was that.
It was interesting. We genuinely did not know where we stood with Amara in the last episode. And I think this episode tried to clarify things a lot.
Did it though?
In terms of who she is and the stands that she was going to make. To me, she was characterized as a much softer Amara in this episode. She's not off playing Keno somewhere. She's... She's looking up at the night sky and she's reading well-respected fiction and she's appreciating the fractals of a tree that her brother created. And she literally at one point said that someone has to defend this world. Yeah. And she had made that choice. Regardless of, like, you know, she says she's not on the Winchester side and she says that she's not on Chuck's side. But I think the fact that she had decided to be on the world's side was really, like, she decided to take a stand for something, and Amara never did that. She wanted to destroy creation because it was her brother's creation. And then when she realized that her brother's creation was beautiful and there were things of value, she went out and enjoyed it, but she didn't do anything. Really, as far as we know, with the life that she was given, and she had no relationship with Chuck. So I feel like the life that she was characterized as living up until this point in time was very selfish. You know, she's playing Keno, she's getting massages, she's learning to be the better her, whatever that means. And in this one, she wanted to take a stand to defend the world. And Amara taking a stand on something is a big deal, and she put her butt on the line for something that she believed in. So to me, this settled in many ways the role that I think she's playing.
Hmm. Had a completely opposite interpretation or experience.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But finish your thought.
Her connection with Dean, I think, is still... Like, there's a lot to discuss there, and probably we'll discuss that more in the subtext episode. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But I felt like I could root for this version of Amara, and I didn't know where she stood before. So your reaction was completely the opposite. Walk me through that.
Well, I think it sort of started where you are. She was being kind in her own way. She was really trying to find a different way for Chuck. Like, she was really trying to take what she knows of him, and she was trying to find a way to compromise. Because she truly believed that Sam and Dean had a way to cage him, and she didn't want to do that, probably because she knows what that's like, and she knows it's awful, and she doesn't want to do that. She obviously still, like, she doesn't understand that her relationship with Dean changed. I feel like that's something that she just, like, doesn't get.
Yeah.
And I think that that's still because there's a disconnect in understanding both Dean and humans.
Yes.
She's trying, but she's not there yet.
But I think, too, like, one of the moments that really softened me towards her was her interaction with Jack.
That was sweet. Yeah, I would agree.
I wish we'd gotten to know one another. That's my fault. Maybe when all of this is over, we can.
You know, she expressed, I think, legitimate sadness at what she had missed out on because of her own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able to state it that bluntly and to initiate a tentative way for them to move forward and make that right going forward.
Yeah.
And again, Amara doesn't express interest in people outside of Dean and Chuck. So to me, that was a sign of her growth as well, both in her regret and in her desire to make it right. But I think that what you're moving towards is that in the end, she crumbles to Chuck when he has that whole speech where he talks about how in the end, the only people that can understand them is each other.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct that that was kind of where you were going towards with it being a problem?
Yes. But I think it's complicated. And it's complicated because, first of all, Chuck is a gaslighting, manipulative, abusive, horrible deity. Dude. I don't know. Well, he's just a bad guy. He was absolutely manipulating her and isolating her. He was doing things that were horrifying. And, you know, the thing with Amara, because she was locked away for so long, is she's both all-powerful, but she's also very naive. And I think that came through in this episode quite a bit, is that she's incredibly naive. Like, she's naive when it comes to Dean. She's naive when it comes to Chuck. But she has been consistently disappointed by men since she's come back.
Yep.
Crowley, Chuck, Dean. And so I think that's where it gets really complicated for me, because I was impressed that she was trying to find another way for Chuck. And then if that didn't work, she was willing to stand up for humanity, which is a big ask. But then as soon as Chuck got her alone, she kind of crumbled. And I'm actually interested in your take on this. I interpreted their sort of fusion situation as essentially coming together, her saying, okay, and then coming together. But there's a lot of people that interpreted that as him manipulating her and then consuming her. So that it was not balance, almost like a vessel situation where he manipulated like Lucifer. And boy, did he sound like Lucifer. And got her to say yes, and then took over.
I spent so long searching for happiness, contentedness in creation, the Winchesters. But the only ones who ever really get us is us. You and me. Back together?
Balance.
Yes. Think of it. Us. Starting fresh. Creating something new. Something beautiful. Peaceful. Together. And we can finally forget about all this pain. No baggage. Only balance.
That makes better sense, certainly. But yeah, I'm still... She seemed very much like someone who had been abused by men.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also just frustrated. And so it's almost like I feel bad about being frustrated that she didn't keep the faith. But
well,
I don't know. It's complicated. I feel weird about it.
No. I think, like, it is frustrating because we want people to be able to see everything that we can see and to understand what we understand. For instance, so, like, as a survivor of abuse, I would love it if everyone who is in an abusive situation could see that they are when they are and be able to identify the steps to get out. And I wish that I could just, you know, share my experience and like that would unlock things for people and make it, but like people only see when they're ready and can only do what they can when they're ready. And I think that there's the understanding of that, but there's also the frustration of that. And I've experienced that with different people that I've known. Because you love them and you want them to be safe and well, and you can give people the resources and you can talk it through with them, but ultimately you can't make a decision for them. And they have to do it in their own time when they're ready. But in the meantime, they continue to suffer and struggle. And so there's like a compassion and a frustration that's simultaneous with that. And I think that's kind of what I was experiencing with Amara, because I felt compassion for her heartbreak, learning that Dean had lied to her, because that was truth. And, you know, like the best abusers and manipulators will always mix in truth with lies.
They're not going to kill you. They're going to cage you.
Oh, sis. They want to kill me. And they want to kill you. There's no cage. There never was. Sam and Dean, they're using Jack to destroy us.
No, but Dean can't hurt me.
Nobody can lie to you. He could send you into the meat grinder with a wink and a smile.
So Sam had always been arguing on Amara's behalf. He was arguing on Amara's behalf all the way up until the end. But Chuck conveniently left that part out. So I think I kind of saw in Amara this like burgeoning strength and willpower that I was like, oh, she's ready. She's ready to come into her own in a way that we haven't seen before, because she was distracted by herself or, you know, whatever, like all of the things that we're talking about. But then because she is limited in her experience, and because I think you're right, there is some naivete there, she believed Chuck when he told her a partial truth. She believed everything that he said because of the partial truth that was there. So all of that potential and all of that willpower crumbled. So there's frustration there as well as compassion, because she was just finding some equilibrium. And it was so brief, but it was so exciting when it was happening that you wanted more for her. And then she gives in to the male figure who is manipulating and abusing her. And that was really hard to see.
Yeah, I think hearing you explain it like that, the reason I couldn't see it is because it was too personal. It's too painful.
Mm.
I don't think I was ever frustrated at her. I think it's frustrated at the situation. And I think it's this.
Yeah.
The, again, context, right? The presidential election. There's so many things that are really churned up when it comes to misogyny.
Yes.
I think that it's hard. Let me figure out how to say this. I think I'm so mad at what I see happening to real women in the real world that are so strong and brilliant and amazing, who have been abused by men, that seeing it in a show, like I said, I'm like at this strange capacity for tolerance and processing. Like, I think I was just so angry at the recognition that Amara actually did mean well, and that she is this all-powerful deity. She just doesn't know what's going on, and then got manipulated. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even see it from that perspective, because it's just like, it hits such a nerve right now. And I genuinely was always creeped out by Amara. And so there's probably some guilt mixed in there as well.
Well, she was pretty freaking creepy. Let's not kid around with that one. I mean, like, she ate souls and was generally creepy. So
yeah,
it's okay. But I think this is another one of those redemption arcs that's in process, right?
Yeah.
I don't think Amara is done. Like, I don't think she's done.
No. I don't either. And I love that they're hitting these legacy issues. I love the idea that the big bad is the personification of white male privilege. We see that that kind of behavior is the most villainous type of behavior. It's just that the timing is just rough. Like, it's painful. Just rough. So yeah. I it really, it really is impacting the way that I'm interpreting and experiencing. So
that makes absolute sense. It does. And I feel badly because this is not when we were supposed to see all of this.
Exactly. They couldn't control that.
No. On the other hand, I just want to like give real props to Meredith Glynn, who wrote this, because I think she did a spectacular job tackling some really nuanced issues as a writer who is a woman writing a female character. I mean, the whole episode was fantastic. I felt like this was what... This was what I was waiting for the last, you know, three episodes. I felt like we finally got the heavy, emotional, fast-paced, so much stuff happened in one episode, epic. This is what I've been waiting for. Like, to me, she knocked it out of the park. That was just a really splendidly written episode. So... yay. In terms of the whole, was Amara giving herself over willingly? Yes. But she was also relinquishing her power.
Yeah.
And I think that we saw that in the way that she was sucked in by Chuck. Because in the past, when they went into their light and darkness, they were equal.
They were like intertwined, right?
And they were intertwined, yeah. And it was the same amount of light and dark. And here it was like she was just disappearing into him. Which, as somebody who's been in an emotionally abusive relationship... there's that sense of losing who you are to the other person. So like losing your voice, losing your ability to express yourself in ways that are unique and different from whoever it is that's doing the abusing, that's all stifled. And I felt like that was very much kind of what we were seeing visually. There was no Amara left. It was just she was being sucked into Chuck.
If she's in here somewhere.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. So he has her power, which is what he wanted. But it's not an equal joining of partners. It's very much like you were saying, some people were talking about the way that Lucifer suppressed the people that were his vessels, and most angels suppress or put to sleep the people that are hosting them. I felt very much like that. Jack, the scene in the Impala where he's like,
"You don't have to say anything. And you don't need to be sorry. I'm not like Sam or Cass. I understand."
And I was like, what? How are you even real? I mean, I know you're a fictional character, but like, how are you real? You're so good.
Yeah, I don't know that I saw that necessarily as him being good so much as him just being a kicked puppy. He actually reminded me very much of young Dean through this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I feel like Jack also has that black and white thinking, you know, this is the only way, there's no choice. He feels like everything is on his shoulders, that he has to do this for his loved ones, that he has to do this to atone for being who he is and doing what he's done. How many times over the years has Dean said that he's a waste, that he's bad, that, you know, Sam's the smart one and Dean's the one that needs to be sacrificed. He's not listening to loved ones who is saying that something is wrong. Yeah, he's just completely focused on this one thing. I remember when Dean sold his soul to save Sam, it was that similar thing. He felt like his life would mean something if he saved Sam. He would sacrifice himself to atone for being that horrible person that he believed that he was.
That's that scene with him and Bobby where like he's saying, maybe my life could mean something. And Bobby's like it didn't mean something before.
Yeah, like being genuinely upset, emotional over Dean truly believing that his life didn't mean anything. So yeah, for Jack, that's what it invoked for me. It wasn't like, oh gosh, he's so sweet. It was like, oh God, he truly has such a low opinion of himself because of the things that he's done, many of which were outside of his control. You know, you try being born a baby all powerful. For me, it was tragic and it made me deeply, deeply sad. But also... but also wanting to pull my hair out because Jack and Dean Like, even current Dean is acting just like Jack. They're both fixated on this one thing. They've both bought into Billy's plan. They're both doing the black and white thinking. Neither of them are listening to loved ones. I think they've both shut down all of their emotions, too.
Mm.
Emotions shut down. We're going to do the thing. That's it. So, I found that to be devastating, basically.
Mm.
So.
Okay. Jack's making me sad. He's being like his dad, and it's hurting me. His dad, who's like, he's not family.
Right, he's not family.
After he said to him,
"You're family, kid. And we look after our own."
The end of season 13.
Yep, Dean is channeling his dad. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot that he's channeling right now that I'm like. Okay.
Well, if you go, don't come back. I mean, that's where the show started.
Yeah.
Is John saying that to Sam, which is not a declaration of he's not family, but it's in the same ballpark, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. John Winchester.
Okay, hold on. I have to just say, in the John Winchester discussion, that when Sam is giving his speech to Dean,
we need to talk about that. Because, holy
Yeah. Like, he paired John and Lucifer.
With Lucifer! I know!
And I was like, damn. Okay.
Yep. That happened.
We're not arguing about it anymore. That's a statement that was made just there. Oh, mm-hmm. boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a whole, like, moment.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. Okay.
So did you have more about Jack?
Just that I thought it was interesting that Dean said it's go time in the Impala when it was just the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew that if they got to the bunker and then decided to do the rib thing, somebody, Cass or Sam, would get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
He was actively making choices that were not okay at any level and just, like, furthered my rage. Which, you know, secondary emotion. The sobbing is the true feeling. The hurt and
betrayal's what I went with.
Yeah. Well, it was. So, but yeah, he was actively making choices throughout that whole thing that were not okay. And I think the thing was, if he had not looked conflicted through the whole thing, it would have rung not true as being Dean.
Mm-hmm.
But he did look conflicted through the whole thing.
He did.
And he did have, like, moments of hesitation. Like, oh, where are you taking him? Like, what are you going to do with him when they were at the shop? He had those moments. And then it was like he fought them off. Like, you could see him willing himself back into the place of being okay with it. And that's why it rang true to me as being authentic Dean rather than just being out of character.
It was masterful acting by Jensen.
Yes.
To be able to bring that nuance was incredible because, yeah, when they were at the shop with Adam and Serafina, she says,
"I just think of, like, everything that had to happen for you to get Jack to this place, to this moment. Baby, it was meant to be."
And his brain, like, I could see the wheels turning, going like, oh dear.
Yep.
That sounds like I'm being manipulated, because you're exactly right. But he has to shut it down. And, you know, I have tons of thoughts on that. But, yeah, he kept having those little moments of pause. But he couldn't let himself look at it too hard. He just had to keep his nose down and keep going.
Yeah.
And the idea that Dean and Jack are in the same emotional place at this point, when Jack is 3, I feel like is a statement. Mm-hmm. Or it's... You know, I don't know if they were making that statement on purpose, but it definitely seemed loud.
Yeah, very, very telling.
Telling. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shall we go to the confrontation scene in the hallway? That whole hallway scene was just like...
That was a lot. Like a lot, lot. And the first time I watched it, not only could I not process it, but I couldn't believe it. We're talking about a TV show. Like, and I'm just like, no, I can't believe Dean would do that. No, he's pulling a gun on Sam. Like, no, I can't believe that. You know, I can believe clearly a great number of things. I can watch God absorb his sister, and that's fine. But Dean pulling a gun on Sam, I'm just like, no, no, we're not gonna, no. Mm-hmm. I felt my brain just shut down at that point.
He was like a train on a set of tracks that was at full speed, and nothing was going to stop him from making it down to the end of the hallway. And there was a lot going on in that mm-hmm. scene, and there were a lot of callbacks going on in that entire scene.
So many. Oh, my gosh.
I wanted to go back to what Chuck said to Amara, because she literally breaks down and is crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Amara understands love, but I think that she was kind of experiencing the heartbreak of first love.
Yeah.
The person that she trusted to always be on her side and to always fight for her was fine with her being collateral damage in this war with her brother. She says,
no, but Dean can't hurt me.
Nobody can lie to you. He could send you into the meat grinder with a wink and a smile. Look, I get it. You wanted him to care about you. But humans, they'll break your heart every time.
That's not how he sent her in, first of all. He looked extremely conflicted in his entire conversation with Amara. And then after she winked out in that whole, like, where he was like, you're saving the world thing, he looked very troubled and he did this letting out his breath, like, mm-hmm. you know, like regret kind of thing. So that's not what he was doing. He was not sending her off with a wink and a smile. But it was the terminology that Chuck used.
Mm-hmm.
That hit you too. You knew what that was from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The meat grinder language from the end.
Yes.
They cleared a path for us. Which means that this is a trap.
Exactly.
Well, then we can't go through the front.
But we're not. They are.
They're the decoys. You and me, we're going into the back.
You mean you're gonna feed your friends into a meat grinder?
Cast too?
You want to use their deaths as a diversion?
Oh man, something is broken in you. You're making decisions that I would never make. I wouldn't sacrifice my friends.
Which, fascinating. Well, since we've been talking about that and comparing this Dean to that Dean.
Yes.
And now Chuck is purposefully using that language. And I was like, oh.
Yes! I always love those moments of like, yeah, we got it right. We picked up what they were putting down. Yes. I mean, not that I'm happy that Dean is this way, but we picked up on it, Kosha. Yay. Mm-hmm. High five into the ether. Because I remember the first time I heard that phrase, it was such a, like, painted a really awful picture kind of phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And Verstein from season 5 was willing to sacrifice Cass to reach his goal of killing Lucifer with the cult. So he was willing to sacrifice the only person that was left that he should have cared about to reach his goal. And that was such a cold version of Dean. Our Dean saying to that Dean, you're willing to put your friend in the meat grinder to make this happen? And he's like, yes, absolutely. And it's just like this horrifying moment of this Dean is so unrecognizable from our Dean. Mm-hmm. So what were your thoughts about Chuck using the same phrasing?
Well, the end is one of those versions where Sam kills Dean. So it's mm-hmm. one of those endings that Chuck was going for. So the mm-hmm. fact that he's reusing that language, he still has that ending in mind. And so it just shows just how long he's been, like, we know how long he's been trying, but I don't know, having that reminder again of how long he's been trying to get them to kill each other was mm-hmm. just simultaneously horrifying and awe-inspiring that the boys have resisted over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
The way I perceive it is confirmation that they're paralleling this Dean with N verse Dean.
Was horrifying, yeah, I guess, as well.
Yeah, similar. It's like, oh, yay us. Oh, God. Oh, my baby. I thought we avoided that. Yeah.
I think that's part of the pain, is we've been just cheering for him all season, and then he just swan-dived, and I don't know what the hell triggered it.
I actually went back, because I was trying to understand that, what happened, and so I went episode by episode trying to measure where Dean's anger was at the time, and so he was furious from episodes 1 through 9. And then in episode 9, that's with the prayer scene. And then he was healing and they were talking after that. That was the hero's journey and the gamblers. And he was being a bit more him. You mm-hmm. know, that's when he was tap dancing on tables and buying cooking magazines and communicating with Sam.
And it was before Jack came back.
Right.
He specifically healed things with Cass.
Mm-hmm. And so it was the gamblers, right, where Jack came back?
Mm-hmm.
After that, it was him trying. You know what I mean? So it's like he had finally healed things with Cass. He seemed to be feeling good for a couple of episodes, feeling just safer and softer. And then Jack came back and it was back to that tension. And so from my perspective, from what I see, Jack came back. There was a lot of him. He was mad. But it was normal mad, mm-hmm. you know, like he interacted with Kaya and he interacted with Jack and he's trying to manage some of this stuff. And then in episode 15, he talks to Amara and he talks to Amara about Mary. And it was after that. My personal theory is that talking to her triggered the hell out of him.
Bringing back everything with his mom.
Yeah, because it's not only talking about Mary out loud, which there's not a lot of in their lives, but it was talking to a deity about how Mary was used to teach him a lesson that I think he was just like, nope, this has to stop. I can't live this way, which is what he said. Like, I can't live this way. So that's my theory. Is that that conversation with Amara really deeply triggered him. Because you're right, it was very quick. He was baking birthday cakes. Yep. And then he was ready to send him off as a suicide bomb. It was really quick.
Yeah.
I think that trigger caused a lot of regression. But, you know, like we were talking about with the last episode, it's like regression in an extreme that we've never seen. So it's not even regressing to old behaviors. It's taking the old negative behaviors and making them much, much bigger than they ever were. It's as if, like you said, he has this goal and he has to stay focused on that goal. He has recognized for himself, this thing is unacceptable and has to be stopped. When I was watching it today with no expectation, no note taking, no any of that, what I saw is that Dean has never prioritized himself, like ever.
Mm-hmm.
He's always put everyone else ahead of him. He always has been the grown-up. He's always done what needed to be done. And so it's as if Dean is finally, for the first time, being selfish and saying, like, this is something I have to do for me, which I think is really powerful for him. But because he doesn't know how to do it, it's like Amara trying to navigate relationships. Like, he doesn't know how to do it. And so he's swung off wildly in this other direction. And the reason that it came to me, honestly, is because we had Sam and Dean having their emotional scene in the hallway. And it kept going back and forth between Sam and Dean and Amara and Chuck. And so Sam's trying to appeal to Dean, and Dean's trying to say, like, I just can't do this. I cannot live like this. I won't. I'll sacrifice anything. I will give anything. I just can't. And then there's Chuck and Amara talking about balance. And I was like, that's what Dean hasn't found yet. To me, and I could be totally off, but to me it seemed like he was finally ready to take a step and say, like, okay, I'm willing to do something for myself here. But he doesn't know how to balance prioritizing himself with prioritizing the world, with prioritizing his loved ones. It's very all or nothing for him.
Don't do this. I don't want to do this. But this is everything.
No, it's not. Billy takes over, then everyone goes back to where they belong. That means everybody. From Apocalypse World, Bobby, Charlie, they get sent back to a place that doesn't exist anymore. And everyone we saved. Eileen, she just dies again. And that's just the beginning.
There's nothing else we can do, okay? We just gotta get out of the way.
No, we can't get out of the way, Dean. Not this time.
I don't care if Billy gets what she wants. I don't, man. I trade it all. I trade them all for Chuck. In a heartbeat.
What about me? Would you trade me?
Chuck has to die. He has to. Otherwise, he'll keep us tap dancing forever. And I can't live like that, man. I can't live like that. I won't.
And so if you look at it in terms of regression, he was always the good soldier and daddy's blunt instrument and didn't question and he repressed and didn't use his critical thinking and everything was black and white. So it's like he's regressed to a young Dean trying to prioritize himself and it's just going horribly wrong.
But it's interesting.
Horrifically wrong.
Because he's also at the same time following orders.
Right. Well, and that's the travesty of it all, is he thinks he's finally standing up for himself, but he's just doing exactly what Chuck wants.
And as far as he knows, he's also doing exactly what Death wants. So on two different levels, he's following orders, ones that he thinks he's following and ones that he doesn't know he's following. Mm-hmm. But on both levels, he's toeing the line, and that's not Dean. That's not the Dean that we've known. That's the Dean of a long, long time ago that he has totally outgrown.
Yeah, I feel like that's the point, is that he's regressing back to these old, quote-unquote, comfortable behaviors from his past. I mean, of course it's more comfortable to just follow orders, especially if those orders are telling you to do something that you kind of sort of want.
I wanted to talk through Chuck's words.
So many of Chuck's words that I want to talk through, yeah.
I know. And Chuck says,
Dean, brought to the edge of doubt, his sense of duty, his rage winning out in the end. And poor Sam. I always gotta know everything. Can't leave well enough alone. This is my ending. My real ending.
Chilling, man. So then we get into the question of how much of this can we really be mad at Dean for, ultimately? Because how much of this is his free will and how much of it is not? I think that's part of the chillingness of all of this, is how far he can be pushed in any one direction by Chuck's nudges. I struggled with that.
Yeah, I get that we were always going to see Dean at rock bottom. Like, from a storytelling perspective, that just had to be where we were going. It's just that his bottom was a bit lower than I was expecting. And I've been having a tough time with that. He pulled a gun on Sam, and I didn't even get, like, oh no, I went to. Well, that's stupid. That's not... That's not gonna stress Sam out. I would figure Sam would be like, really? Because if any of us know one thing for sure, it's that Dean's not gonna kill Sam, but that's like the whole point here, I guess. Like, that's what Chuck is always pushing towards. But I just, not once ever was I like, oh no, what's he gonna do? It's not like Jack at the end of season 14 where I was like, oh boy, what's gonna happen? No, like, he's never gonna shoot Sam. Like, I just, that was never like a real threat for me, I guess. So I think maybe it was supposed to be. And I guess that speaks to my faith in Dean, that no matter how low he goes, I truly just don't believe he's ever going to hurt Sam, like, full stop.
I think this was meant to be the ultimate test of their relationship. And even that part of it was very much calling back to earlier stuff. So there's a moment where Sam grabs him from behind and is holding him. And that was very much a callback to when he was a knight of hell and Cass comes up from behind him and holds him and is like, it's over, it's over. But in that situation, he's like, okay, it is over, even though he's raging. But here he actually manages to throw Sam off. For me, it wasn't so much about the will he shoot Sam, but more about the drama of, is their relationship going to be able to survive him pulling a gun on Sam and behaving in this way? That's why I think I was so moved by Sam's response.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't go to a place of rage. He doesn't go to a place of, like, how dare you? He doesn't go to a place of blaming Dean. He goes to a place of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
The strength that he has in that moment, in that deep vulnerability, when he starts talking about how Dean has protected him for his entire life. That whole speech, man.
It was because Sam's face.
I don't think Sam knew.
Right, exactly. When Dean said, I'll trade them all, Sam was like,
what about me? Would you trade me?
It was like Sam went from being this grown, powerful man to being this little kid.
Oh my gosh. And that kills me every time.
I was just like, oh, Jared. Like, ouch.
We don't talk enough about how Jared can do. In Lebanon, when he confronted John, that was the whole episode for me.
Mm-hmm.
Was him calling John on what John did, saying how messed up it was. And in the scene where he says, I believe in us. It's that same, like, raw vulnerability. And I think we're just so used to seeing steady Sam that for him to go into that childlike place of, you're my brother, and he does, it's like his inner child comes back out. And it just, like, it rips my heart out of my chest, Krisha.
I know.
I just, oh my gosh. Know. Like, I wish he had more of these moments. He's been healthier.
Healthy.
Yeah. He's so healthy. You don't want him to be that distraught. But man, Jared can act. Those scenes are. Whew. When he says,
my entire life, you've protected me. From Dad, from Lucifer, from everything.
When he, like, grouped his dad and Lucifer together, my brain stopped and just didn't go any further. But John Winchester was like, and I am so glad, like, we've been talking all season about how they've been addressing legacy issues.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I feel like it couldn't be any clearer.
Yeah.
He had to be protected from his own father by his brother. And then he lumps John in with Lucifer. You had to protect me from
Dad. Like, the actual devil. Yeah.
And you had to protect me from the actual devil. And exactly. I just went, okay, that is a legacy issue that they've needed to address.
Well, I think they've been making it a lot clearer. I think it was open to interpretation for a long time. And I think they've really started to solidify that John wasn't just neglecting the kids. He was abusing them.
Yes.
And I think it's important in understanding Sam and Dean and understanding the level of their trauma. It's not just from hunting monsters. It's also from being hurt by the person that was supposed to love them.
Mm-hmm.
That has had an impact on the way that they approach people and relationships and their relationships with themselves and their relationship with each other. I do think that's a legacy issue that I'm really glad that they touched on, because I think it was necessary and important. I don't think it's a coincidence that they put John in the same category as Lucifer in an episode where Dean is absolutely spiraling and has regressed deeply. And so for as much as I spent this episode furious, and I'm not trying to make excuses for Dean, because that boy screwed up, like, on so many levels, just so many times, but he is being manipulated by God himself. And he's been manipulated by God himself for his whole life. You know, for as much as John Winchester was an abuser, he was an abuser because Chuck wrote him that way. He's been led down this path for his whole life. And just like at the end of season 14, when he didn't kill Jack and he didn't make a deal with Chuck to get his mom back, you know, Chuck was like, oh, you did it again. You know, this was supposed to be his ending.
Yeah.
And it still didn't happen because Sam talked Dean down.
Because Sam was vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about how vulnerability is strength and how they're showcasing that this season with Dean and his prayer to Cass. And now with Sam and his conversation with Dean, he says,
I didn't always like it, you know, but it's the one thing in the whole world that I could always count on. It's the only thing I've ever known that was true.
And then I was so caught up processing that part that I didn't even process the part where he says, so please put the gun away.
So please put the gun away. Just put it away. We'll figure it out, Dean. We'll find another way, you and me. We always do.
And I didn't process that until we were partway through this episode, and now I'm legit tearing up again because, you know, as much as we know that Sam's not going to get shot by Dean because there's three more episodes left.
They're just not going to do that.
Yeah. They're just not going to do that. They're going to focus on other stuff with the dying first. Yeah. So, like, we know that's not going to happen, but I think for the first time in his life, Sam didn't know. And instead of lashing out or engaging in a way that was full of anger, he reacts by becoming extremely vulnerable. And I think that this showcased the power of vulnerability and what it can do to absolutely change the course of events in individual lives, as well as bigger stories. Because, like, they were supposed to kill each other. That was the moment that Chuck had written that Dean was going to kill Sam. That was his real ending.
And it wasn't going to be maliciously on purpose. It was going to be everyone's hot and the gun goes off in a fit of desperation or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's the only way it was ever going to happen.
Yeah. And vulnerability overpowered the might of God putting together a string of events that had happened over millennia. Like he talks about how he manipulated this all the way back to Serafina's vision in the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Like that was a really, really long time ago. I mean, he'd been steering this for a really long time in a very specific direction. And everything came to pass the way that it was supposed to. And then it was all derailed by Sam's powerful vulnerability in using words that it's encompassed incredible. His emotions with his brother, who had shut down all of his emotions, except for rage.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful message. I think it's such a beautiful thing and such a powerful scene, because Sam was being completely authentic. He was being completely genuine, just like bared his soul, and we're watching Dean trying for the first time I think to prioritize his own comfort and happiness. And to do that, he had to literally shut down all of his emotions and get rid of everything that he holds fundamentally true. He prioritizes the world. He prioritizes Sam. He prioritizes everyone but himself. And so he went fully in the opposite direction, sort of like Cass used to do.
I was just thinking, like, he pulled a Cass.
Yeah.
No, I'm not the leader of anyone. I'm just going to be God. Yes.
But that's the power in it, right? Because we talk about Sam being so healthy. Sam, who we talk about being so healthy, has figured out how to prioritize himself and have boundaries for himself and his happiness and his relationships while also helping the world. And Cass has found a way to put boundaries on what he needs and to prioritize himself and his happiness, but also help save the world. Those are things that we've watched Sam and Cass navigate that Dean just hasn't. So I think that was a big part of what was going on here. And so for as much as I still want to shake him, the fact that with all of history against him, with God himself driving him, I mean, like a rat in a maze, like it really seems to be that towards this end. And for him to defy him even then.
I think it's really interesting that in that moment when Dean decided to stand down, it wasn't him doing it as an act of defiance against God. It was him doing it as an act of love for his brother.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about how Chuck doesn't understand relationships and how we think that's going to be a part of his downfall. I think we talked about that in our episode about our father who weren't in heaven. And to me, this is just confirmation because he set up the events to play out in a certain way. But what he couldn't account for was the human dynamic. And he uses words like stupid, stubborn, and broken in response to the fact that they don't do what he wants them to do. But it's because he doesn't understand the power of love that humans can have for each other in all of its various forms. I mean, like he hasn't understood the love between Sam and Eileen. He doesn't understand the love between the brothers. He doesn't understand any of it. So I think that this moment here was a small taste of what is going to ultimately be Chuck's downfall, is that he doesn't understand relationships. He doesn't understand the love that people can have for each other and the power that is in that love. And I think that's why he's ultimately going to fail. And I think that's also a very powerful statement for the show to make, because so much of the show is about machismo and these guys going out and kicking ass and killing monsters and saving the world and being heroes. But there's this whole other part of the show that is all about relationships and love between people who care about each other. And that is the reason why we tune into the show week after week. It's not because of the monsters with lots of teeth. It's because of the love that these characters that we love have for each other.
And I think it's not even just love between humans. I think that it's angels too, maybe even demons, you know?
Oh yeah, yes, absolutely. When I say people, I mean like beings. But yes, yes, I absolutely 100% agree with you on that. Yes. But you also wanted to talk about a certain angel, an angel of Thursday, perhaps.
The self-hating angel of Thursday. I mean, I think that you and I will probably spend many hours in the future, barring fresh catastrophe, talking about the implications of what Chuck said about Cass.
Castiel, the self-hating angel of Thursday. You know what every other version of you did after gripping him tight and raising him from perdition? They did what they were told. But not you. Not the one off the line with a crack in his chassis.
I think that it confirms what you and I already believed. But the fact that it was confirmed so bluntly.
Yes!
It changes everything.
Yes!
Everything. Every interpretation of every episode of every season forever. Everything. I know I can't even hear you, but I know you're making noises. Because you're up in the high pitch that my headphones don't like. But our Cass is literally the only one in the multiverse. Like, he is the one being that had free will. Like, true and complete free will. That refused to do what he was told. That refused to comply with what Chuck wanted. Just the ramifications of that are just so much.
I think I haven't even wrapped my brain yet around this part, so I'm flailing even more.
I've read a lot of meta on it. I've read a lot of people's comments and thoughts, and I just like weep at my phone. Because the ramifications of this statement are incredible. And they're not just incredible for confirming what we already know. It changes. It truly changes the landscape of the entire show. I think it's going to change Dean, that understanding. Because he, yes. I think, has been questioning so much about his relationship with Cass this season.
Yes!
And just the meta of it, even. They keep trying to write Cass off the show. they couldn't. It just doesn't work without him. You know, nope. It's just I'm hours. I'll spend hours about it. Just know. Just know. I'm thinking about it.
Oh, and my gosh.
I'm still wrapping my brain around it, too. Like, on the one hand, part of it was, I don't want to say anticlimactic, but it was just like, yeah, Ben knew that. Like, I knew that. Like, of course he is. So it wasn't this like shocking reveal. It was just like, you're damn right.
Yes.
But thinking it through and realizing that when something goes from speculation to being truly canon, it really does change things.
It's huge. To have said that Cass, like, from the beginning, you coined the term, Cass is the wild card. He's the one that's going to change everything. And we got it here. They did what they were told, but not you. He's the wild card. He's going to change everything.
And he used the term crack in his chassis, which I think is really important because that's what Naomi said. And Naomi was the one that kept rebuilding him and resetting him.
Yes.
So that was Chuck.
Oh, yeah.
Taking the broken Cass and trying to reprogram him. And it just never worked. But Naomi's irritation was actually Chuck's irritation, which is just delightful. It's just nice. Like that.
I mean, there's so much. Oof. Okay. Mm. So, like, it was the first time that he's been called the Angel of Thursday on the show.
Yeah.
We all know that as part of the lore surrounding the show, that Kripke was looking for a name. It came up as the Angel of Thursday, and he liked it, and there was a tie-in to the fact that it was airing on Thursday, and blah, 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 blah. That whole thing has been talked about. So, like, we knew it, but, like, he's never actually been called that on the show ever by anyone. Mm-hmm. So, like, even that little part of the lore surrounding the show becoming canon through a single line on the show, that has just powerful, lovely reverberations, although I could do without the self-hating Angel of Thursday part.
That's not inaccurate, unfortunately.
It's not inaccurate, unfortunately. Yeah. There were so many, like, so it's like the Angel of Thursday gripped you tight and raised you from perdition, came off the line with a crack in his chassis. And like, whew, whew, yeah. And I had this whole thought about that now that it was Chuck that said it. Because he spends the entire episode of Swan Song
talking about... Oh, you're right. Sorry. Got ahead of you.
Yeah. About that 1967 Chevy Impala that rolled off the line.
3 days later, another car rolled off that same line. No one gave two craps about her. But they should have. Because this 1967 Chevrolet Impala would turn out to be the most important car. No. The most important object in pretty much the whole universe.
And he just rhapsodizes about this vehicle and how it was the most important vehicle in history and how it changed everything. But ultimately, you know, people are going to murder me for this, but Baby is not a living, breathing character.
How dare.
It's just terrible. I know. I feel bad even saying it. But Baby is a car, and like, we all love Baby. Baby is incredible. But I think that's how Chuck views Cass. I think that Chuck views Cass as a prop, as something to wind up and throw out and do its job and play its role and then not be intrusive. Castiel is a living, breathing character. Like, he's more than a car. People are gonna hate me so much. But
I think that Chuck viewed everyone like that. I think he looks at everybody like cars. And I think that that's why Cass irritates him more than anyone. Like, at first he was fun because he was bringing some drama to the situation. So, like, yeah, I'll bring it back. Sure. You know, he makes the story extra special because he does, which is literally why they kept bringing him back. The writers here in the real world kept bringing him back because he does bring something to the show that the show needs, I think. And so Chuck was happy to do that for a while, but it wasn't Chuck that brought him back this last time. It was the empty. Point being, I think Chuck was done with his crap long ago, but Cass just keeps coming back and keeps defying him. And it's so... we talk about how Cass changes the dynamics. We were just talking about that. It's not just about that we missed Cass. It was that we missed what he brings out in Dean and what he brings out in Sam and what he brings out in Jack. And it's those exact things that are thwarting Chuck. And I love it. And I'm here for it. And I'm stressed about next week's episode because... So,
yes, I think we all are. I think everybody that loves Cass is really, really, really nervous about next episode. And that's just because of what we know surrounding the episode from when they were talking about it, when it was first recorded. And we have theories and we know that the empty is going to call her due at some point.
Rachel Miner, by the way, amazing. So excited to see her.
Oh my gosh, there was just so much in this episode.
I know. I just need to do one quick shout out.
She was amazing again. Like, so creepy and scary. And
Sam lawyered her and it was fantastic.
It was so good. He was a trickster. He took on a trickster role and I was just like, this is amazing. I think we're all really nervous about next week for good reason, but
we'll be here.
We'll be here.
We'll process it. It may take us a minute because, you know, this episode of television that we all know is going to gut us just happens to coincide with the presidential election, which is, you know, probably also going to be emotionally complicated. So, not loving that matchup time-wise, but yeah, no. We'll be here.
That's right. We'll be here. And I think one of the things that we can trust about it is it's Bobo. It's Bobo Behrens who's writing it. So mm-hmm. I think we can trust that even if it is painful, it's going to be well written and it's not going to be like dumb.
Yeah. I mean, he's ripped my heart out and stomped on it viciously a couple of times this season. And, you know, I said, thank you. And I love it. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, he did the breakup scene. Mm-hmm.
He did the prayer scene.
He killed off Rowena. Mm-hmm. He's had some really oof.
He's been busy.
He has. And he co-wrote the scene with the Clink with Meredith. That was the two mm-hmm. of them. So the Clink being the two glasses clinking
yeah.
when they have that heart to heart, in case anyone can't talk shorthand to STL. So yeah, he's really written some amazing stuff this season, and I'm very much going to trust that he will walk us through this with good writing, even if it rips our hearts out.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be here.
Yep. Weeping on Twitter. That's where you will find us this week.
Yeah, I'm going to make myself watch live this week, no matter what. We are wrapping it for this episode. You can message us and stay up to date with the latest on our Twitter and Instagram pages at TheFangirlBiz. That's B-I-Z or B-I-Z. We will see you again next time. And until then, carry on, wayward friends. We love you guys. Bye.
Bye. We talk about Sam being so healthy. Sam figured out. Sorry, my printer is possessed by a demon, I swear to God. It just randomly makes lots of noise. But yeah,